There's failure and then there's failure, big and small. One way to prevent the big ones is to develop tolerance for the small ones along the way. That's part of the idea behind a Pentagon drive to get more commercial innovation into its so-called third offset strategy. For what this means to contractors, Larry Allen, principal at Allen Federal Business Partners, talked with Tom Temin.
For too long, federal procurement and contracting has had a failure is not an option mentality. And of course, that comes with good intentions where people don't want to waste taxpayer dollars. None of us want to do that. But what failure not an option has really led to is people not taking risks, not trying innovative approaches. And that's one of the reasons why some estimates suggest that as much as 70% of federal information technology dollars are spent on maintaining existing systems. We've gotten into a situation, Tom, where we're afraid to fail. And one of the reasons I like the Army's third offset program is it takes small projects and essentially the prototype phase of their lifespan, tests them out, and if they work, great. If they don't work, that's okay, too. We haven't gone all in a big way with taxpayer investments. And we do find things that are going to succeed that we probably otherwise would not have found. And that's a benefit for the government, and that's a benefit for everyone.
Does the Army conduct these experiments using standard acquisitions, or do they use grants or CRADAs or some other mechanism to try out things?
Well, a lot of these procurements, Tom, are done through DARPA, the Advanced Research Program inside DOD. But also they are done under special procurements done by the Rapid Response Team within the DOD Acquisition Technology and Logistics Arm. They're not really done through the regular acquisition system. And the key there is being able to move at the speed of the technology. We're talking largely here about things that aren't commercial off the shelf, at least not yet. They may be in 5 or 10 years, but now they're prototype technologies that need some investing to do proof of concept. And look, not all of these, not even many of them, will succeed, but if we go through traditional acquisitions and traditional means of oversight, then we won't discover some of the things that could be very critical to national security, cyber defense, and other top-tier needs in the government.
And how does the Army in particular, or any DOD agency that wants to do this kind of thing, how do they get their requirements known to some of these non-traditional vendors that may not even be attuned to the standard way that the government goes about business?
Well, that's been a real challenge, but it's also, Tom, been a real focus of the Army and other military branches. You know, we've seen well-publicized trips that high-level DOD people have taken to Silicon Valley, but there are also incubators. There are a number of technology incubators, not just on the West Coast, but in and around Washington, D.C., where companies have been set up to work on technologies with limited time, and some have funding from third-party sources. And some are ones that sit directly in front of DOD technology officials and get funding either through a grant or acquisition process. We've seen some things that have gone through GSA's 18F component. I think the real challenge is not just making these firms aware of the DOD's need, but attracting them in such a way that they understand that, look, you're not going to face a mountain of paperwork and you're not going to be called on the carpet before Congress if you fail, at least not on this scale.
We're speaking with Larry Allen, principal at Allen Federal Business Partners. And I want to switch gears for a minute because another item that you have published talks about Pyrrhic victories and whether protests really are necessarily Pyrrhic victories or maybe sometimes things are worth protesting. And I guess you were protesting something we had run at federalnewsradio.com saying that protests were Pyrrhic victories.
Right. And this is a traditional struggle, Tom, that government contractors face. The decision to protest or not to protest, to paraphrase Shakespeare, that is the question. And what the article on the Federal News Radio site was saying, and it's a valid point, is that contractors have to think long and hard about protesting because they risk upsetting their customer. I take a different view. I see protests being a part of government contracting life. For major projects, the fact is that buying agencies build in protest time to their acquisition planning cycle. There is not a major interagency contract action, for example, setting up GSA's Alliant program or last year NASA's SOUP program, that doesn't engender a round of post-award protests by companies that didn't succeed in making the initial cut. And when you're spending seven figures on a major bid for something like a NASA SOUP, and you can protest at the GAO for $40,000 or $50,000, that's pennies on the dollar to make sure that your proposal gets another look. My experience has also been that unless you're a serial protester, and there are some of those, you probably aren't going to aggravate the contracting officer or do irreparable harm to your relationship. As I mentioned, protests are expected, particularly for any type of buy that has a large dollar value tag to it. So long as you're not being frivolous or consistent in protesting everything, I think that the risks of upsetting a relationship are overblown.
There seems to be two types of protests that get launched, for the most part. One is when there's something gigantic at stake, like the long-range bomber, you know, that's going to be a 25-year, 35-year program. And if you don't protest, you're not being fiduciarily responsible to your stockholders.
Right.
And the other type is when the government just clearly screws up. And there are cases where you look at them and scratch your head asking, what were they thinking in this source selection?
Well, you're exactly right, Tom. I mean, the government, many government agencies do a good job of setting out what their evaluation criteria is going to be. That is, how our contractor is going to be rated and viewed based on the criteria the government says they're going to use in a particular procurement. And then once the offers come in, the buying agency may use an entirely different set of criteria to judge proposals by than they said they would. And this happens more frequently than you would expect. And those are cases when you do get protests. Those are cases where you often get successful protests because the buying agency didn't follow the procedures it said it was going to. And, you know, that's a typical legitimate reason to protest as well.
So you're arguing for not never protesting and not always protesting, but protesting when you think you really have good grounds.
Well, that's exactly right. Generally, I see companies being too reluctant to protest, and there's a serious downside to being known as a no-protest company. You spend a lot of time and effort putting your proposal together. You have every right to expect that it gets a fair shake along with all of the others.